CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're going into Earth orbit. Thanks to commercial space, Bob Zimmerman is here to introduce us to the attempts to get into Earth orbit, the failures to attempt to get into Earth orbit. All of this is part of the great monetization of boosters and nanosatellites and trips into the lunar space and the Mars space and behind. It's always wonderful to celebrate. So when something doesn't succeed, it's still a success. Bob has taught me. Bob, a very good evening to you. ABL, a failure. What does it mean? Thank you.
Good evening, John. Yeah, we didn't get into space here, and we'll have a bunch of stories not getting into space. ABL is one of those rocket small sat startups. It's raised several hundred million dollars, with its chief investor being the company Lockheed Martin. In fact, Lockheed Martin is essentially bankrolling ABL to provide Lockheed Martin a launch capability. That's the major investor here. So ABL has a rocket called the RS-1, which it had been developing to launch. And this week, it attempted its it has been trying, by the way, since the fall to launch this rocket, but they've had a variety of technical problems and weather problems that have scrubbed it. The launch was going to take place from Kodiak, Alaska. They finally attempted to do the launch this week, and it failed. Apparently failed in a spectacular manner. They did not provide a webcast of this, so there's no way to watch this when it happened. You only can depend on later reports. Apparently, the countdown completed, the nine first-stage engines ignited, the rocket lifted off the pad, and then for some reason, all nine first-stage rocket engines shut down. And so the rocket, which is not very high up above the launch pad, just simply fell back to the ground. And with all the fuel in it, boom, everything went boom, boom, boom. They have not disclosed exactly when that shutdown occurred and how high the rocket reached, but they did say the explosion damaged the launch facility. No one was hurt. Damaging the launch facility means it could not have been very high for it to fall back right down onto the pad. Now, of course, they got to figure out what went wrong. It's a rocket, so first-time failure is not that unusual. They're not dead, this company, by any means. They have already a contract, for example, with Lockheed Martin for as many as 58 later launches of the RS-1. And part of their deal is to provide Lockheed Martin launch capability out of one of the Scottish spaceports that are being developed right now. So this company is going to be back, but they're held back for the moment, John.
We go from a failure to a failure, but this one's significant because it took place in Cornwall and it's Virgin Orbit. Bob, you've watched this company for some time saying the business plan worked, but it has to work. What's happened?
I lay the blame on what's going to happen to Virgin Orbit entirely on the incompetent, corrupt, can I say any worse words, bureaucracy in the United Kingdom. Virgin Orbit last year planned to launch from Cornwall on its 747, which would carry its Launcher 1 rocket into the air, and then they would release it and take satellites into orbit. They planned to do this launch last August. And they needed to get permits from the UK government. It would be the first launch from the United Kingdom in history, orbital launch. So they needed to get permits, and they needed to get permits. And they started the permit process back in 21, sometime around September of 21. So for them to be expecting to be able to launch by the summer was not unreasonable. And they prepped the rocket, and they needed to do major preps on the 747 as well for this particular launch. So it's all ready to go. They don't get the permit. In fact, they don't get the permit until early January of this year. In other words, because they had prepped the 747 and a Launcher 1 for this launch, they could do no other launches while they waited. So for a period of the second half of this year, they had six other launches on their manifest, all of which had to be delayed because they couldn't launch because they were waiting for permits from the UK government. No launches, no income. So the company started to have to borrow. First, it borrowed like $45 million from Virgin Group. That's Richard Branson's larger company. Just last week, they sold 10% of the company off to raise another $37 million. Well, they finally were able to launch early this week. And unfortunately, the launch was a failure. The 747 took off with Launcher 1. Launcher 1 separated. Its first stage ignited, worked fine. There was a separation. The second stage fired. And somewhere after the second stage took over, and they have not specified what happened, there was a failure, and everything went into the drink, into the Atlantic. This company is financially now in very serious problems because it's going to take several months at minimum to figure out what went wrong. They can't launch again until they figure what went wrong. They are now in increasing debt because no one ever revenues come in for months and months and months, no more than a year. And so it is very likely that Virgin Orbit is either going to be sold off to try to survive or it will go bankrupt. And the reason for the failure entirely sits on that bureaucracy that could not simply sign a piece of paper saying you can launch. And there was no reason for them to take 15 months to fill out that piece of paper, John.
We go to the happy news from SpaceX. Musk is in the news all the time, not for SpaceX, but this time there is expectation of the Starship launch. Remind everybody, because we've been waiting for this so long, what do they hope to achieve in the first launch, Bob?
Starship is the upper stage. Super Heavy is the booster stage, the first stage. And combined, they produce the most powerful rocket ever built. And it's a heavy lift rocket, much more powerful than the Saturn V and more powerful than the SLS, NASA's SLS. And they're both designed and eventually to be completely reusable. The Super Heavy booster has 33 Raptor 2 engines, and it's designed to come down and land vertically, as the same as the Falcon 9 first stages do. And Starship is kind of designed as a modern space shuttle. It will come down through the atmosphere protected by tiles, and then it will land vertically, not on a runway. And that's the plan. So they've been working up to their first orbital test flight. And they were delayed for more than a year, some for technical reasons, but I think they would have launched just to get data and failed if they had been allowed to. But the Biden administration stalled, slow walked permits. And so now, this past week, Elon Musk put out a tweet saying that the company is now targeting late February, early March for the first orbital launch of Starship. The two are right now stacked on top of each other at the orbital launch site, the way they're going to actually launch from. And they're going to do a series of tests, including a static fire test of all 33 Super Heavy engines at one time. They have now strengthened everything so that they can actually hold the rocket down while they do a static fire test. The thing is that there is still one barrier to launch, and based on what happened to Virgin Orbit, this is going to sound familiar. But the Biden administration still has, and the FAA still has to issue a launch license, and they have not done it. And I will tell you right now that I can think no situation at all where this federal corrupt government will be interested in issuing that license in a timely manner. They play in politics because Elon Musk is around. He is not favored anymore by Democrats, so therefore he must be damaged in all ways. So even though Musk's, and it looks like very much that late February, early March, they could launch this thing, especially if the static fire test comes out fine, they won't be able to because they'll be waiting for a permit from the FAA. And that's where we stand, John.
Musk is also Starlink, and there's controversy here. However, I saw recently, Bob, the celebration of Starlink as a critical component for Ukraine to last this long against Russia, because Musk made those offers. Eventually, I think there was an a way of organizing it, so he was paid. Much of it had been gratis. But now Starlink is in the news for the National Science Foundation. This looks like a good thing, Bob.
Yes. It also illustrates that SpaceX has tried to be a good citizen in this matter. The astronomy community has been complaining that the Starlink constellation, all those satellites in orbit, is going to interfere with ground-based observations. There was a worry that the radio frequencies it used would interfere with radio astronomy. And so SpaceX has been in negotiation with the National Science Foundation to try to work out an agreement, which they have now made, an agreement to coordinate not only the use of radio spectrum so that Starlink satellites do not interfere with radio astronomy or limit that interference, but also to do a whole bunch of other things to limit the brightness of the satellites and how they will interfere or reduce the possibility of interfering with this astronomical observations. And so this deal has been signed. It includes not only the radio astronomy deals, but a whole bunch of things having to do with reducing the brightness of the satellites. It's good for ground-based astronomy in all ways, but it just simply underlines once again that astronomers have to go to space. And if SpaceX flies Starship, their companies will provide them a way to put all their telescopes in orbit if they want, John.
There's some exciting new telescopes that can be launched over the next 10 or 20 years. Very exciting. And so I join Bob in saying that ground-based telescopes, while famous and ceremonial and magical for the history of astronomy, cannot match the wonders of the James Webb or of Bob's favorite, of course, the Hubble telescope, which is still in orbit and promising. Bob, there's no change, right? They're going to service it. They believe that there's...
Well, we don't know if they're going to service it, but they're now looking into possibilities of improvising new ways to service the telescope, so it will continue to work.
And it has a bright future if the Starship has its way. Is that correct?
That is correct. If Starship flies, the possibilities in space go up enormously. Everything, almost all things are possible then.
And James Webb is miracle after miracle. So now we go to Roscosmos. Roscosmos will remain for the next several tens of thousands of years the first and the most successful of all manned space programs until Vladimir Putin and a man named Dmitry Rogozin took over sometime in the beginning of this century. And they've run it to ruin. The most recent example is, Bob, you have two explanations for why the Soyuz lifeboat attached to ISS will no longer fly manned. What are the explanations, and what are they going to do about it?
Yes. So the Soyuz that is on board the station that brought three astronauts up to ISS back in September developed a leak in the external radiator system of its service module. And a lot of research has been done. Both American and Russian engineers think it was caused by a 1 millimeter particle striking the vehicle with a speed of around 7,000 meters per second. Now, what's really important about this story is that this week the Russians and NASA came to an agreement on what to do about the problem. They are not going to try to bring anyone back in that Soyuz capsule. They just do not know if it's safe to use it as a lifeboat. And so it's going to be brought back empty of people, probably with some cargo in it, and that way Russia can inspect what little that comes back to see if maybe they can better pinpoint what the problem was. In the meantime, they're going to take the next Soyuz that was going to launch in March. They're going to move it up to a February launch, but it will not have three astronauts on it. It'll be empty. And so then it'll become a lifeboat for the three astronauts that are still on board ISS. Now, those three astronauts were supposed to come home in March, a six-month mission. However, because the capsule that they're going to use was supposed to launch in March, the Russians say they want to keep it up there for 6 months. Which means that this crew is going to have to stay up in space for an extra 6 months. They come home on the next Soyuz, but they'll come home on its planned return date. This means that Frank Rubio, which is one of the three people on board and the only American that came with this capsule, he's going to end up with a year-long mission. And he might very well set a new American record for the longest space flight, totally by accident. Now, as for the hole, John, it's pretty much agreed it was probably caused by some kind of meteor particle that hit very fast and hard. Whether it was junk, whether it was a micrometeorite, we just don't know. There is another possibility that the Russians admitted to but have not provided us any detail, and they have not really evaluated. And that possibility, let me read, is of a manufacturing defect in the radiator system of the Soyuz. A manufacturing defect. So in other words, something that was done on the ground that failed once it got up into space.
Now, Bob, we don't know manufacturing detail. That goes back to the questions. You recall how we ran into that bad patch of Soyuz failures after many years of success, and then they retired the Proton. So that you reminded me just the way you presented that they've been using manufacturing irregularities for some time to explain their systems. And what you emphasized is a combination of influence peddling bribery, corruption in general, had led to the deterioration of this of the manned and robot space program. Do I remember that correctly?
More or less, yes, you do. The Russians have had quality control problems now for more than a decade, and it's mostly because they don't allow competition in Russia. Once they dumped communism, there was a possibility of new companies to form, but they instead used the old government agencies that built these things. They turned them into companies, and they refused to allow new companies to form in competition. So without competition, right, there's no incentive to do a good job, and that's the situation here. We do not know if this is a quality control problem on the ground, but that they hinted that it might be is of interest, John, definitely.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring, deep, deep, deep space exploring. I'm John Patton.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.